This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Yannick Marignan.
And I'm Luc-Olivier Dumébré.
And what's our topic this week, Luc-Olivier?
This week, I'll talk about the Xbox and PC gaming.
Awesome. But first, let's do a little bit of follow-up. I'm going to go all the way back to episode 2, the topic that never dies, mobile payments. Starting off with something about Starbucks. So this is something I don't remember if we've talked about, because of course it's been over a year since this episode aired, so we have had follow-up on this topic numerous times, and I don't remember if I've ever brought this up, but there has been news in the field of Starbucks Touch this week, and I would like to bring it up again in case I didn't. So Starbucks Touch is what happens when Japanese retailers react to Apple Pay not being compatible with existing infrastructure. And instead of selling you a Starbucks card that you use either by itself or via Passbook or the iPhone app, they sell you an iPhone case with an embedded Felica-powered Starbucks card. And this came out quite a while ago. I think it was about a year ago, and I forgot to bring it up on the show at the time. But new models came out this week supporting the iPhone 6 Plus size phones, and it reminded me that this thing existed. And they're going to renowned graphic designers to do designs for these cases so that you aren't putting up like some crappy Starbucks looking case on your phone. It actually looks very good. This new series is by Yuni Yoshida, which is not a name that you've probably heard of if you're listening to this podcast, but she's really big in the Japanese fashion scene. And I know a couple people, friends of mine, who got the earlier models and were very disappointed with the case quality. But reports about this new case seem to be that it is much, much higher quality than the previous one. And that's a good thing, because the case, it goes for $40 right now. It's not a cheap case, and you wouldn't really want a crappy case for $40, especially when it has a Starbucks card embedded in it. What's not clear is, of course, if you buy the case now and then a new phone comes out in a month or at the end of the year, your case is worthless, and what happens to your card? It's unclear if you can transfer the card over to another case or whatnot, because the product is relatively new and has only been working on iPhone 6 and iPhone 6S form factors. That hasn't really been an issue, but we're in a year that is going to change a lot of things in the iPhone lineup probably, and they probably need to figure that out.
Yeah, that's the typical situation with third-party cases.
Yeah, but like, battery cases, okay, sort of makes sense. But now you've got actual money sitting in your case, and that's sort of like a touchier thing to do. Maybe you just finish your card there and then start on your new phone, but for a while you're going to be carrying either an empty phone case or an extra phone for no reason, really.
No, I understand that point. And especially like at work, we've seen those, maybe not this exact product, but those payment terminal devices that you can like use as a sled for iPods on iPhones, and even those companies are tends to not create new cases and new devices for new iPhones. They are pretty slow to adopt those. So I still have some terminal in our QLab that requires iPod Touch like 4 generations. It's just maddening.
Yeah. Next up, I have had some adventures in mobile payments over the last 2 weeks. I have tried to use, I guess it's not really mobile payments, it's more contactless payments. I've been trying to use the Visa Tap to Pay technology. And would you like to guess what my current success rate is?
I would be surprised if it's not like 90, 95%.
It's 0%. It has worked exactly 0% of the 3 times I've tried it. I am infuriated.
Oh, wow. I'm surprised, to be honest.
I think I'm cursed when it comes to payment stuff, because my debit card, which if you are a devout listener of the show, you may remember that a month ago I changed my debit card because I was lazy and didn't call the debit card company for months because I just don't go out that much, so I don't really have a reason to use it, but I needed to pay with it, so I called the company. Guess what? My debit card chip, a month after I got it changed, is already starting to exhibit issues. So I have no confidence that anything related to payments at all will ever work right for me. And I pray to the gods that someday Apple Pay will come here and make my life less of a living hell.
I hope so. But seriously, I'm surprised. Even with my old Visa card, now I'm on the MasterCard. So But even when I used to have a Visa card, it worked flawlessly. So I think you're like kind of shining weird energies that interfere with NFC, something like that.
Yeah, probably. That's probably it. Let's move on to happier topics. Episode 28, we were revisiting the Apple Watch, and I mentioned on that episode that I was very, very disappointed that multilingual input was still missing. And it turns out that at some point in the watchOS 2 betas, multilingual language input was added. It just wasn't documented anywhere. And the way you activate it is force touching on a dictation controller to get a choose language button. And if you listen to the episode that we talked about that on, that is exactly the thing that I suggested they should have done. It was already in the OS. And this illustrates two things about the Apple Watch. The first thing is the lack of discoverability of force touch actions, which once you force touch on a screen, if it doesn't do anything, you're never ever going to force touch on that screen ever again. And it's not a good idea to put stuff like that into force touch menu and then never talk about it anywhere.
Oh my goodness, it works!
Yeah, it does. It's amazing.
I'm trying it right now. Oh, wow!
Who knew? And the other thing, of course, is it's eroded confidence. You just get used to things not being possible on the Apple Watch that you just don't actually keep up. You keep checking if it changed. And it just happened to me right there. So thank you to the guy on Twitter who is not a listener of this podcast, but just randomly mentioned me to tell me that this is already in the OS. Thanks, I guess. now I can use this feature.
Yeah. Speaking of the Apple Watch, by the way, maybe I'll do a quick tangent. I started to like reorganize the application, remove some of them, and started to use Sleep++ these days.
All right.
And I'm kind of surprised. Like, Sleep++ works, I wouldn't say flawlessly, because we mentioned it in this episode, in the episode, but it works at a higher rate than other apps. And most of the apps that I use, that I stopped using, are not getting new updates, and it seems that they are better now. So I don't know what's happening. It might be just my brain playing with it and just changing perspective. But for the last week, I'm trying to use my watch more often. It feels to me that it's quote-unquote faster. Or I'm just used to wait.
I think it's about the same as usual. But I have been using my watch much more since I started the new job. And hopefully we can talk about this in an upcoming episode, either the one about the iPad Pro. I could turn it into something a little bit more about working with iOS devices in general, including the watch and not just the iPad Pro. But it's useful. It's not perfect, but it has value.
Nope, totally right.
Okay, last but not least, episode 31. This was the episode where we talked about Nintendo consoles. And today, Nintendo Life put up an article talking about the lack of success with the new 3DS. So, the new 3DS, of course, is the revised model of the old 3DS. Everybody knows that. Come on. Nintendo has had some trouble trying to convince the market to go ahead and buy the new 3DS, and that certainly must have something to do with the fact that there are only two games that actually require it, and nothing else. I'm going to link this in the show notes, because if you're interested in the topic, it's an interesting read. And a friend of the show, Kimimi, on Twitter, argued that it's hard to get excited about a revision to a device that should have been the 1.0 version of that device several years ago. And I agree 100%. The 3DS was basically incredibly pathetic and underpowered. And it still is today with the new 3DS, except the new 3DS would have fared a lot better in the original climate the old 3DS shipped in. So go read that if you're interested in Nintendo consoles. Speaking of video game hardware, I heard you got something new this week.
Yeah, before we start, I think that this last sentence kind of summarizes our whole episode about Nintendo.
Delivering too little, too late?
No, the one after, it's underpowered.
Oh, yeah.
But that could be applied to But yeah, like, nobody has no reason to buy a new one. And I think right now, the only reason to buy a new 3DS, like, in the coming weeks, would be if you want those new special edition Pokemon ones. But that would be it. And even then, most people, I'm sure, like, the problem they have is most people that already have a 3DS, if it's not broken, they won't change it.
Yeah, but if you own Monster Hunter, you get faster loading times.
Yeah, and I'm sure you do with normal games, too.
No, they have to be adapted for new 3DS.
Oh, okay, good.
Yep.
So, yeah. Before we start with the Xbox, I wanted to do a small, like, first impression, like I love to do, regarding the Oripad Ultimate Controller for iOS.
Yep. So this weekend, I was sitting around being a lazy ass and playing G. Darius on my Hori arcade stick, and Nikodivy asks me, which game controller should I buy? Should I get the Nimbus controller or should I get the Hori pad? And since I was playing on my Hori arcade stick, I told him, well, I'm playing on a Hori arcade stick right now. You should probably get the Hori. I mean, they have years of experience designing third-party controllers for various hardware. They've done it basically since the Super Nintendo. So you can't really go wrong with a company with that kind of track record. And from what I gather, you bought it.
Right. And funny story related to your side, I was just in the Apple Store trying to watch Bands while waiting for you to reply to me, because for once, you didn't reply exactly to me. So I was like, Yannick, pick up your phone, pick up your phone. That was pretty funny to do in the Apple Store. But yeah, I had to go to the Apple Store for this duckhead recall that they want to do with the European and blah, blah, blah. So at the same time, I wanted to, every time I go to the Apple Store, look at the accessories and realize that today would be the good day to buy a controller, and that they add a new option. Because every time I go to the Apple Store, it's always the Nimble Steel, like Yannick mentioned, and then today, there was a new one. And the new one is the Oripad Ultimate. And I wanted to ask you your advice, because I remembered you sent me a link a while ago that was, I think it was when the Apple TV launched.
Yeah.
That was doing a roundup of all the controllers. And the Oripad one, I think it's not the Ultimate, I think it's just the Oripad controller that was on that list, didn't fare that well. And I found this article again and read what they said. And they said that it was good, but not as good compared to the Nimbus still. But with the picture, you saw that it was not the same one that I bought. Like, it looks, on the picture, cheaper.
I'd actually like to see the one that you bought, because I don't know what it is then.
Then you'll be able to find it in the show notes after this episode.
Wow, I'm just going to Google it right now.
Good. So the main reason why I wanted to buy a controller for the Apple TV was for two games, to be honest. Since I got my Apple TV, I played a lot of Rayman Adventures. Yes, you can judge me. I don't care. But this game I don't care. But this game is really awesome. Like, to me, I think they do have a typical iOS version for the phone and the iPad. But it feels to me that if I want to play a game on the big TV, but don't play like big games like we mentioned in past episodes, Rayman is a good one to just turn your brain off and play and enjoy it. But the experience with the Siri remote isn't that great. The Siri remote is only used to do special action, because the Rayman character will auto-walk. So I wanted to buy a controller for that one, but the main reason was to play Ocean Horn. Yeah, I know. I just bought it recently. It's been a while since it's out, and yes, I'm playing it right now. So even then, when I bought it, I didn't want to try it without a controller. So maybe in the coming days or week, I'll try it on the iPhone or with the Siri remote, but as far as it is right now, I only played it with the new controller.
Okay, I'm looking at your controller right now. Where the original Hori pad looked more like a third-party PC controller, but loosely modeled after the DualShock controllers that the PlayStation's used, this one looks much more like a DualShock 4. In fact, even the control stick has the little concave things
yes.
on the sticks. So actually, this looks even nicer than the old one. I'm pretty impressed.
Yeah, and compared to the Nimbus Steel, which has a quote-unquote Xbox layout, that's the main reason why I bought it after you said that, yeah, it should be a good choice. Like, the fact that it looks like a PS4 controller, and it feels like a PS4 controller. The plastic on it is really good, and it has a good feeling, and it's pretty heavy, but heavy in a good way. It's even heavier than the PS4 controllers, which is strange to say, but it's really good. It doesn't feel cheap in your hand. I wouldn't like throw it around, but it doesn't feel cheap. Obviously, all of the buttons, trigger, joysticks works and feel as good as either the PS3 and PS4 controllers. So for the price of it, which is the same price as the Nimbus Steel here in Canada, which is $65, it is a pretty good buy, to be honest.
Nice.
And I do hope that there will be more games with controller support in the near future. I browsed a bit again in the Apple TV App Store, and it seems to me that most of the games right now are already having support for it. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing if game companies, like bigger game companies, actually jump on the Apple TV bandwagon, because right now it seems to be mostly mid to big sized indie shops that are putting out these games on the Apple TV with game controller support.
Yeah, it's like the same company that do big games on iOS will do their port for the Apple TV. But they are good games. It's just that if you're expecting normal like console-grade games on the Apple TV, it's still a hit or miss right now.
I mean, they exist. They're just uncommon. Very uncommon.
Oh, yes, they are. Really uncommon.
All right. Is that it?
Yes, it is. So now we will speak about Microsoft first. So this week, I decided to group both the Xbox and the PC gaming industry as a whole, because they do have, in my opinion, they do have the same, they have one thing in common, and it is both that I don't game on Xbox, and it's been a while since I game using a PC. So it is a good exercise to go back a bit and see what those two platforms offers to gamers. And that will be what we will be doing today and looking at what they will bring in the near future. So before we take a look at what they will bring in the near future, we'll start with a small history of the Xbox. And this is going to be funny, because I say history, but it's pretty close. So the Xbox launched in November 2013. And
The Xbox One, not...
Oh, yeah. Obviously, I'll misname everything again. Hey, like I mentioned recently, just me. So, the Xbox One was launched on November 2013. And do you remember what was the original idea of the Xbox One?
Yes, I do. It was going to be the best device to watch TV, to play fantasy football, and to watch streaming video on, and also play games in tiny little text on the bottom.
Exactly. We did spoke a bit about the Input One device last week during your episode, and I think right now the Xbox One, like as it was announced, was supposed to be the current generation of, like, this should be your Input One device. So it was launched with smart TV capabilities. It was announced with smart TV capabilities, so you can plug in your DVR or either any like TV input sources while also play all of those like sports game. If I recall correctly, it was announced with big feature for Call of Duty and Madden. I might be wrong, but it was Call of Duty and one of those big sports game, either NFL or baseball. And then a couple of time just after the announcement, we got a great controversy that happened at E3 that year.
Yeah.
And that big controversy was regarding a new type of DRM that would be included with the Xbox One. So they announced that the Xbox One will have a different way of buying and owning games. And the important part is owning games. So all games, physical and digital, would be tied to your Xbox Live account. Meaning that, obviously, it is this way right now with digital downloads. But if you buy a physical copy, you would only have to put the disc, and the disc will do the installation. And the disc will also be used as kind of a like serial number, like a game code. And then it will be tied to your Xbox Live account. Also, added on top of that, they would add scummy ways to lend your games to your friend. And the addition of all of this DRM would mean that the console will need always on internet connection. Every 24 hours, the console will have to ping the Microsoft server to make sure that it is yet again the right account and blah, blah, blah. And if it was not able to do so, it will completely disable the gaming functionality. So all of your game will become unplayable.
Can I just add a little note here?
Sure.
This is basically describing exactly what Steam is, and gamers love Steam. I don't understand why this was a huge deal on the Xbox.
To be honest, I think the main difference, and I think we'll go back on that on the PC gaming section, but it is also the same discussion as the App Store could say too. And the main difference is in those two worlds, the App Store or Steam, you don't have the physical analog part of it. Like, there's no way for you to go to the store and buy a game, and then it... Now that I say that, I think you can do that with the PC game. On Steam.
Yeah, I have a copy of The Orange Box on PC that I bought on DVD, and you put the DVD in, you install it, and then it gets tied to your Steam account, which is precisely what the Xbox was planning to do. The difference is that nowadays, Steam doesn't bother with boxes at all anymore. They used to because it was more popular to buy PC games in stores. But like, I don't think that stuff like Dota 2 is available box.
Not that I know of, or if it is, it's just a box with a download code or something.
Well, I think Dota 2 is free, so maybe that's not a good example, but...
Any other game on Steam that are
modern
big enough.
Valve games are not shipping in stores.
Yeah. But we'll go back on that, on the part of Steam having physical copies of their games, because it's really important with their current success, in my opinion. But yeah, you're right. Now that you remind me that, yes, you're right, that the Orange Box, you just put the DVD in and that's it. And the DVD is mostly for installation purposes and for serial number purposes. And then you can just throw the CD away and that's it. And you're totally right. Like, the backlash was... Oh, like, part people complaining, and mostly because Microsoft tried to drop some... So Microsoft tried to do something new, but as usual, Microsoft trying to explain what they want to do and trying to explain their vision just end up in a shitty situation.
Yeah, it was really just a big messaging issue, because if you look at the first... When they first introduced the Xbox One... They primarily did the input one thing, and I think they announced it... Actually, no, I was going to say they announced it at CES, but that doesn't make sense because it was May when they announced it, because I was somewhere traveling.
If I recall correctly, I don't have the original date, but they announced it maybe a month or two before E3. And
that
E3
sounds
was
right. So they did all the non-gaming stuff before E3 so that they would be able to basically spend all of the E3 time talking about gaming, which is pretty smart, because normally if you try to do both in an E3 presentation, gamers are just pissed off whenever you're talking about the stupid sports and TV stuff, and they just wait until you get to the games and you have basically half of your press conference go to waste. Whereas if you do a separate event doing all the input one stuff, you can invite a different set of press that can cover that stuff and then invite the other ones. But the impression that gamers got from that first event is, oh, well, they don't care about gaming anymore. And then they came into the second presentation about gaming with a negative idea of Xbox One. And then everything they heard from the Xbox One team, whether it was justified or not, got a negative response.
Right, and a couple of hours later, after the announcement at E3, there was like, Sony was like, we love you people, we love you, come to Sony, come to the PS4, and that's what that. And I'm sure all of this from Sony. First of all, it is quote unquote good for the PS4, but at the same time, I think it invigorate those people that were complaining, and then give them more arguments, and to say like, here, take a look at the PS4. It's better for gamers.
Yeah, and looking at something like the game lending thing, it's basically even better of a deal than SharePlay, which we have on PS4, which we talked about in previous episodes, where you could literally lend the full copy of the game to a friend for, I think, either a week or a month at a time, that they could download the game and play the entire thing if they wanted to, and then you could get it back into your collection. And I don't think you could, like, play together, because it's not a copy of the game, it's lending your game. But
I was trying to find information regarding it, and the information I got was that you could create your own family sharing. And by the way, that feature got dropped.
Yeah, so, it's gone.
And yeah, and all of this backlash caused Microsoft to drop some of those nice features, which were badly unexplained. And one of them that I got information was family sharing, where you could create a family, and then, like you mentioned, Yannick, lend those games to those friends. But I was not able to find the appropriate information regarding what is the limits of lend. Some people were saying like you can lend them once without limitation, or maybe like a month limitation. But since it got dropped, like, nobody cared about it and just ignored the announcement.
Yep.
But if you were able to, if you started to read between lines, you kind of saw that that feature was pretty neat, but it got totally removed. At first, it was not totally removed. They say, oh yeah, we'll remove it to ship as the date we expect to ship. But then they shipped, patched it, and by removing it, and then said, yeah, it won't come back.
Well, the problem is, it's hard to enforce, like, because game rentals are still a thing somehow, you can't really enforce anything if you don't lock it to a single account. And if you lock it to a single account, you have all the gamers that are angry.
Yeah, and the last generation of the console tried to do those, like, online codes to make you pay for online access.
Yeah, which kind of, most companies have moved away from.
Yeah, because nobody paid for it and just didn't play it online, so they saw the number shrink and shrink and shrink. Good, so my point being, from the history part, is it wasn't a good start, to say the least.
No.
And it's not to say that the Xbox One is a bad console, it's just that, yet again, we do have another example of Microsoft badly explaining their new shit.
Yep.
And in a way, if I go on the feeling side, I would say again that it makes me sad, because last generation, what made Sony and Xbox fight together brought new games, brought innovation to those consoles. And it seems right now that, I wouldn't say it's a done deal for Sony, but it looks this way.
Well, there are two PS4s sold for every Xbox One.
Yeah. right now, if we look at the numbers, Microsoft didn't announce any official numbers. The only official number they announced was last year, saying that they sold 10 million consoles. But that number was... it was announced maybe 3 months after the PS4 did the same achievement. And right now there was rumors from that got out from EA that says that the current generation console sold a combined 55 million. And really recently, Sony announced that after Christmas, they were able to sell like nearly 6 million consoles, to a total number of 35. So if you do the calculation, this would mean 18, 19 million consoles to date for the Xbox.
And considering that it came from EA, EA's, they have a subscription service where you can get advanced access to the games and free games and stuff. That's only available on Xbox. So if anything, there would be a bias towards Xbox in that case.
Right. So that's why I tried to find other numbers, and people put a range of 15 to 20 million consoles to date, which isn't bad. But like you mentioned, if they want to achieve big numbers like they did with the Xbox 360, they are on a slow start to do so.
So why do you think that the sales are so low?
That would be a good question, to be honest. And I tried to look at the old number, even in Japan, because we... it's funny, like, I do have a link that I'll put in the show notes that mentioned that during a week over the summer, over last summer, the Xbox ones, yeah, it's for a week, sold what, 200 consoles?
Yeah, and the other day I sent you a bar graph and you pie graph, and you saw that the Xbox One sold 99 units in a week.
Yeah, it's just like maddening, especially compared even to the Xbox 360 again in Japan. Like, as far as I remember it, the Xbox 360 was kind of a good success in Japan.
I wouldn't call it a good success. I would say that it got a lot of games that were unexpected from the Japanese developer scene, because nobody was buying the Xbox 360. And then you had these really niche Japanese games come out on Xbox 360 that don't really make any sense. Even to this day, I don't understand why they came out there.
Yeah. And I think it's maybe because at this point, Microsoft knew that they had the big, like, I wouldn't say they have the big part for the 360. They were the console, even if in the end the PS3 didn't do so bad. But for the 360, they did add so much, advantage compared to the PS3 that was at the beginning so expensive and blah, 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 that if we flip it and now finally answer your question, it is strange to me that those consoles are not saying that much. And why would explain that? Feels to me that after 2 years, what drives your growth in those first 2 years here is your loyal customers, the hardcore gamers that will buy the new console in the first 6 months to a year.
So I think that there are a couple of reasons. The first is online plays a big part of it. One of the reasons the Xbox 360 was so huge is because all of your friends were on Xbox Live, and very few people were going to be on PSN. So if you wanted to play multiplayer games, even if they're multi-platform games, you had to get an Xbox because that's where everybody was.
Yeah, but even then, why would explain that everybody was on Xbox? Especially on the 360.
Yeah, well, it's the snowball effect. If the early adopters get that 360, then everybody else is going to have to follow suit because that's where everybody is.
Exactly. And right now, all of the early adopters are on the PS4.
Yep. Another thing I would attribute for low sales of the Xbox One is, where are the Xbox One exclusive games that are any good? And one would argue Halo 5, right? Halo was the game that sold the original Xbox. And Halo 5 looks really, really good. I still really want to play it, but I don't know anyone with an Xbox One. But I think there are so few Xbox One exclusive games right now that make the system worth buying that a lot of people are just going to see the huge install base on PS4 and they're going to go PS4. Right now, the big exclusives are Titanfall, the Tomb Raider game that just came out, which is exclusive to Microsoft for a while.
For, I think, 6 months on the Xbox One, and then PC will get it, and then PS4 will get it at the end of 2016.
Yeah. So there's
that. As you can see, I'm waiting for this game.
There's that. There's Halo Master Chief Collection, and there's Halo 5. And the issue with the Halo games is, at the very least, Halo Master Chief Collection was a complete disaster. And it's not a disaster because it's a bad game. It's a disaster because the game shipped, and then the online functionality, which is arguably what everyone was buying it for, didn't work for 3 months.
But you know what? From the number I found, this is right now the best-selling game on the platform.
Oh, I believe it. People bought it. but it didn't work for 3 months.
Right. And the number that got thrown around is 5 million copies for Halo Master Chief Collection. And all of the other games that got mentioned by Yannick are some of the games that was announced by Microsoft as 1 million copies sellers. So Tomb Raider did it. Forza did it. I think you didn't mention Forza.
I
think Forza 5 and 6 did it. And then Halo 5 did it too.
Yeah.
But just to go back a sec, like you said that there isn't enough exclusivity on the Xbox One. And my current feeling for the PS4 is the same. Like, I don't think there's much exclusive game on the PS4 too.
Do you listen to, like, it's hard to say that we watch the same game events if you think that. Because almost everything has, at the very least, PlayStation-exclusive stuff. Maybe the game isn't PlayStation-exclusive entirely, but it has PlayStation-exclusive stuff. And
then, okay. No, okay, you're right.
And
okay, I see your point.
I would say that one of the big examples of this, well, first of all, I'm very partial to Destiny. Destiny has a lot of content that is gated off to be PlayStation only. There are weapons that you can't get in the game on Xbox until next year. And it's been like that every year of Destiny so far. There are maps that you can't get on Xbox, and there are single-player missions you can't get on Xbox yet. So,
but don't forget that games like Call of Duty started this way for the Xbox One, too.
And now they're doing the same thing on PS4. They announced that over at PlayStation Experience. So more and more games are doing the PlayStation-exclusive content stuff. In terms of PlayStation exclusive games, you have games, of course, that are developed and funded by Sony. So you have the stuff like, actually, I'm not sure if Final Fantasy VII Remake is exclusive or not. But Shenmue 3, which was one of the big reveals at last year's E3, is going to be an exclusive title.
But it's not out.
It's not out yet because they did the Kickstarter last year, so can't really ship it yet. You've got Street Fighter V, which, this is a big U-turn because Street Fighter 4, for most of the tournament runs until PS4 shipped, were played entirely on Xbox 360. Street Fighter 5 is going to be PlayStation exclusive game entirely, which is big for the fighting game community. And I'm looking forward to that coming out. I think it's next week. But I don't think it works with my stick, so I'm going to have to buy a new fucking arcade stick. I already have like 3 sitting on my desk. That's great. So there is PlayStation exclusive stuff, and I don't want to turn this into the PlayStation episode right
now. No, we don't want to.
But I'm just saying Xbox has a lot less impressive exclusives on that front, and they announced their exclusives so late in the game. I think last year's E3 was a good showing of exclusives, but none of those games have shipped, and they might not ship this year either. So it's unclear what they're going to be doing in the meantime. And on top of that, indie games on Xbox, this is where one of the places where they completely screwed up, because Xbox 360 was basically the home to indies. They even made indie games on consoles a thing, because Xbox Live Arcade had what they called top-tier independent developers, which is we select the best indie games from a pool of people and we give them professional dev kits and whatever. And they also released a little later on XNA, which was a free toolkit you could go download on the internet to make Xbox and Windows games. And they had Xbox Live Arcade indie games, which was basically like the App Store. You could submit arbitrary games to the indie game store and sell them there. And I have a couple friends who have put games up on there, and everything seemed to have worked great. So Xbox 360 was super welcoming to indies. And then you show up on Xbox One, and basically the first thing to come out of Microsoft's mouth to indies with regards to the Xbox One, until they had a personnel change, was we're not interested in your business. Which is not necessarily one of the things you want to do when indie games are huge right now, whether you like them or not. And they are, I think, part of the goodwill of the community that got PS4 and, well, maybe not the Vita, doing so well.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of my point for the Xbox One is, in a way, right now, Microsoft is A, playing catch-up with Sony, which was the inverse last generation. And like Nintendo, they didn't understood quite well what made their previous console so successful. Like you mentioned, an example of that is last generation indies were a big push on the Xbox 360. They were doing a big push on indies for the 360. And then this generation, they decided to just say, go fuck yourself and go do your business elsewhere. And elsewhere is Sony, which is like, come here, arms open for indies. Because they realized that with the last generation, it was harder to create games on it, and indies wanted to have games, yes, but sometimes they don't have the time and money to work on a like custom platform like the PS3 was.
And I think maybe the most emblematic thing of what happened with the Xbox One can be summarized by basically one personnel change, which is at the very beginning of the Xbox One, the person who was in charge was an entertainment person. They were not a gamer. So they were putting emphasis on what they thought was important. And then from the second that they got rid of that guy after everything screwed up because of their weird messaging, and they put a gamer in their place, everything suddenly snapped into place. And they started showing off more indie games during E3 and all those events because they were talking to them again. They hadn't just stopped and said, no, sorry, we're going after Hollywood right now.
Right. And in this refocusing strategy, like we mentioned earlier, those DRM features that were so controversial went away. As far as I know, I don't know if the smart TV's capabilities are still in the Xbox One. And if they are, nobody cares about them. And then we have weird stuff like the Elite wireless controller that got out last fall.
That's genius, by the way.
It is something. I wouldn't say it's genius.
Well,
but it is something. It is something to differ from your competition.
Maybe it's because you're not a huge first-person shooter player, but like there is a huge market for like third-party controller accessories or modded controllers that you can get. So it makes sense for Microsoft to go out there and say, we're going to make one of these for ourselves, and we're going to use much higher caliber materials than the other guys use to give you really the premium Xbox controller experience. And I haven't felt one. I would really like to, but it's a great idea, and I wish Sony would copy them, really, because, I mean, I want a really sweet, high-quality DualShock controller.
Yeah, and maybe I don't understand this move, but the part I do understand is it is a feature that core gamers, like FPS people, would want to have, and then they are giving it to them. So that's like, why I'm saying that they're playing the catch-up, and they're also like trying to differentiate themselves, and that is, at least to my eyes, a good example of it.
The other thing, of course, is that to my knowledge anyway, they were trying to position Halo 5 as a big esports game this year. And if they're going into esports, people are going to be using those third-party controllers anyway. So if Microsoft can capitalize on that and just get a share of the market, they can just make more money that way. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense.
Okay, good.
If you go to Twitch directories, like for the big first-person shooter games, like I was going to say Black Ops, but that's not what it's called. Whatever the newest Call of Duty is called, sorry, Destiny, goddamn, I can't name any first-person shooters now that I'm under pressure. Well, you know, all of those games where you shoot the people, if you go look at those Twitch directories, I'm pretty sure that like 90% of those people in the top like 50 streams on each of those directories are using those third-party controller things, or either advertise them because they're sponsored by them.
I do have a smaller anecdote regarding Twitch and the Elite controller.
Oh, I would like to hear this.
Sure. You'll be happy to hear that for preparation of this episode, I watched some stuff on Twitch.
Amazing.
Yes. Which brings me to our experience with the console. Neither Yannick or I own an Xbox, The only stuff I did with an Xbox is try some of their demo games in retail stores.
Same.
And also watch videos either on YouTube or Twitch. And I would insert a nice reference if you want to have a 2 hours game, 2 hours play gameplay of the latest Tomb Raider, a polygon dimmed video on YouTube that will be in the show notes. Also, to go back to my small tangent, I watched some Forza Motorsport 6 on Twitch, and the guy that was currently racing was complaining that his current Xbox controller was shit. Like, I think it was going bad. He says, like, at some point I'm just trying to brake and it accelerates. So, and one of the people in the chat room was asking, what do you think about the Elite controller? And the guy was like, yeah, I'm looking at it. Maybe I'll get this one. Get one for to replace this shitty controller. So, seems that it is known by people, and people are taking it as an appropriate option to replace their controllers.
Yep. My experience with the console is very similar. I have played the whatever version of Forza was out last spring on an Xbox One when I was in Japan.
Motorsports 5 or Horizon, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But all I remember is that the UI was only half translated into Japanese.
Ooh, that's bad.
Yeah. So that is my review of the Xbox One. It's half translated in Japanese.
Yep. I think that's mostly it for the Xbox. I think it, like, the last thing I would say, it's, I wouldn't say it's a disappointment, but it's not a good start.
It's a disappointment.
Okay, maybe I'm a little bit more nuanced.
I mean, it's nothing wrong with the system itself. It's just that there are no games on it that interest me that I don't have on PS4 right now, and PS4 is where everybody is, so it's too bad. But if last year's E3 was any indication of where Xbox is headed, this year might be pretty interesting.
Yep.
All right, PC gaming.
Yes. Now to the other part of that. We'll know nothing about it either, even more. So I think we quite teased it a bit. PC gaming these days is nowhere to be found unless you do have Steam installed. And Steam install has become the big player for PC game, especially for a part to game, download the games. So just to give you a quick idea, gosh, Steam is old. It got launched on PCs in September 2003.
Yep, launched alongside Half-Life 2.
I was like, what? Because my last recollection of Steam was maybe like 5 years ago, and then I realized why. The reason why was it was at this point that the OS X client launched in May 2010.
Yep.
And I always knew about Steam at this point, but it was always on the back of my mind. And obviously, the last platform in existence for desktop, Linux, got its client recently for obvious reasons that we'll go through in a bit. And this got released in February 2013. So now that we set in stone that PC gaming goes through Steam these days, let's talk about its online store. So like Nick mentioned during the Xbox part, Steam, first of all, is pretty DRM focused, and B, owns at least half of the market. Forbes was quoting some analysts and their own number in 2011 that mentions that Steam controls at least 50% of the US online market for games. The analyst says it's between 50 to 70%. And if you also take a look at the retail stores these days for video games, PC games are kind of nowhere to be found. Especially if you compare them, if you compare the section for PC gaming to the section for Xbox One games, PS4 games. Like, the only thing you'll see in retail store these days is accessories for your PC or hardware stuff, like video games and blah, blah, blah. You won't see games sold that much.
I would be confident in saying that if I went to the EB Games at the mall right now, there would be more original Wii games than there would be PC games. However, there would probably be more PC games than PS Vita games, and this makes me want to die.
Yeah, and the big difference between the Vita game and the PC game is I'm sure most PC games are on only just download codes
to their
online stuff. But yeah, to be honest though, I don't think there's much to say about the online store.
I do.
I'm sure you do. But my point being by saying that is more that, yes, there's stuff to say about it, and I'm sure you complain a lot about it, but right now, it is the driving force of the PC gaming market. And
well, there's a problem that goes with that.
And that's where I was going to is,
all right,
if there's only one player, where is the competition? And where will be the competition in future? Some people might want to consider some of the EA initiative like Origin, but for what I know and from what I use from Origin, it is even shittier than Steam.
Well, that's sort of the thing, right? So a lot of the big game companies like Ubisoft has one, I think it's called Uplay. There's Origin. There's a couple other things. There's Battle.net for Blizzard games. They all have their weird-ass client they use to sell their stuff and to launch their games. And I guess that's fine, but none of them are particularly good, Steam included. And the other thing is the Steam store has this habit of putting games on sale, and I think this is doing a huge disservice to the gaming industry. Because PC games in particular, people will not buy them because they will say in 3 months max, they'll be on sale anyway. So the de facto price for games these days is the Steam sale price and not the actual price that's on the sticker. And I think that it's really, really bad for game companies to be in that kind of situation. Where unless you are a really, really noteworthy AAA game like a Fallout or a Call of Duty, you are not going to be selling your regular price game ever. And you should not even bother trying to price it at a reasonable price for normal purchasing, because that means that normal people won't ever see that price. They will only think about your sale price. And unless it's like $3 on sale when it normally costs $20, people won't even consider buying it.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll be honest and mention that the last game I bought on Steam was during a Steam sale.
Oh, we all do it. Of course we do. Who doesn't like cheap games, right?
And it's not only that. Is I remember when the last Portal got released. By the way, I haven't played to it, but I don't care about spoilers at this point. But I just remember we were both of us were in CJEP, and everybody in the classroom was like, "You should play Portal 2. You should play Portal 2." I'm like, "Why do I want to pay for it right now at full price when I know that, A, first of all, I don't have that much time to play it right now, and B, that in 6 months, when I'll have time, it will be on sale?"
Yep. That sort of thinking has permeated the entire gaming community on PC, and that basically means that, well, first of all of those issues that we had with Xbox One earlier when we were talking about, like, this is exactly what Steam did. A lot of people are willing to forgo those rights of ownership that they have to a physical game or even to a download game if they can get it really, really cheaply. Because at that point, it doesn't matter that you can't resell it used or lend it to a friend, because it's pretty cheap to just buy a copy to your friend that way or something like that. So I think a lot of the reason that Steam didn't get as much shit, and by the way, they did get some of that shit, but again, it launched when Half-Life 2 launched in like 2003. So a lot of us have forgotten about it by now.
Yeah, exactly. They got that shit 10 years ago when everything was DRM. Like, just to give you a picture, to give a picture to the listener, like 10 years ago, there was fucking DRM in iTunes. There was fucking DRM everywhere. And now thinking about stuff without DRM is more like common knowledge. So people will complain more if you want to put back DRM on stuff that either the DRM went away in the recent years or B, never had DRM.
And Steam got even more shit at the time because people were still on dial-up then. And I can say that, like, downloading upgrades for Half-Life or Counter-Strike or whatever Valve game you were playing at the time, that was not necessarily fun to do over dial-up. So they were very ahead of their time. The problem I see with Steam as well is they don't really seem to be trying to be making the Steam client any better over time. And this is very obvious if you use the macOS version of Steam, because it's been 4 years since Retina Macs have come out and they still don't support the Retina display.
It has been nearly 6 years now that the Steam client is out and it doesn't fucking care about case-sensitive file system like my iMac.
Yep, but that's what happens when you write stuff on top of stupid Win32 shim layers that pretend they're Windows.
Yeah, I know.
Yep.
But I think a part of why Steam as a whole company might don't care that much about the online store can be related to their new initiative. And let's start with the first one, which is SteamOS. They've decided pretty recently that they'll just do a Linux version, a Linux OS base that is like quote-unquote optimized for gaming. And the experience is optimized for gaming. So the whole UI is just for you to enjoy games and is more closely to the same type of UI that you will see on your Xbox on or your PlayStation. And as of September, over the 6,400 games that is available through Steam, there is 2,300 games that are available for the Mac and 1,500 games that are available for Linux. So there's at least nearly 25% of their catalog that is available for their own OS.
Yeah, and it's increasing very quickly. More and more games are shipping with either all three or at the very least Windows and Linux support, which is kind of surprising.
Yeah, and I think the SteamOS will drive the Linux support. And Steam got shit a bit from the gamer industry and the gamer culture regarding the driver functionality of like video game card on Linux and the performance on game of Linux, because right now the whole industry is still focused on Windows, and that's where the drivers are the most performant, and obviously hardware manufacturer and drivers. Do I need to say more? I don't think so.
No.
Yeah. But by building their own OS based on something that, yes, is not Windows, because they cannot do so, is forcing game developers to say, like, oh yeah, you know what? 50-60% of my market is on Steam. And on that 50-60%, maybe half of it will want to run Steam. And I'm sure half of it is a really, really, really optimistic number. But who knows what it would be when the Steam machine are out, which they are out now, and with the later like announcement that we'll speak about in a bit about VR. Like if the ball rolls a lot, I'm sure SteamOS will get traction, and then more people that use Steam will move to SteamOS or Steam machine.
I'm not sure about that.
Why is that?
I don't know. It's just... PC gaming takes place on PCs, and PC people are notoriously change-averse, as we can tell by people complaining about Steam and people complaining about Xbox One features that require DRM to be not feasible, but to make the executive sleep at night, basically. I know a couple hardcore gamers who have moved to Linux, and I listen to them describe what it's like for them to play games on Linux, and I think nobody who wants to have a good experience playing video games right now is going to willingly choose Linux. It would be less trouble to just get a console. And honestly, if you get a PS4 right now, even if there are weird indie games that only come out on PC, chances are 6 to 12 months from now, it'll be on PS4 and Vita.
And you know what? I'm happy to see you should get a console. Because yeah. I think that's the point Valve is trying to do with SteamOS and Steam Machines. Is they're trying to build a gaming console approach to gaming PC. They're building Steam-optimized machines that, yes, like a normal PC, you can change later on parts in it. And they are building a Steam controller that looks and is optimized for games that are supposed to play with a keyboard, but now they play with some kind of joystick haptic feedback stuff that is supposedly better. And they're also building something called a Steam Link, which is, to me, combine the AirPlay technology and the Apple TV, but for Steam. So it's a box that you plug onto your TV and then you beam your games to your TV. Like, all of this feels like Steam needs more control of their platform. And what's lacking is the Windows part of it.
Yeah, because there's no secret, because Gabe Newell is very vocal about it, that the moves with Windows 8 and Windows 10 to have a Windows store and to try and control the platform more similarly to Apple, but maybe to a lesser degree, maybe more like Apple on the Mac than Apple on iOS. That does not sit well with Steam because, of course, they are running a store on top of the open infrastructure of the PC. If there's a risk that the PC is going to become more closed as a platform, then that means that Steam as a business is in possible jeopardy. And they just want to have a backup plan if Windows just decides to go full on iOS. And now you can only install stuff from the Windows Store, which, by the way, the Windows Store apps can't be stores themselves. So Steam is out of the question. And that was almost going to happen on the Surface RT. Luckily, the Surface RT didn't actually sell at all. But if the Surface RT had been a success, then Steam would have had no way, even if it would have wanted to support ARM on Windows, Windows on ARM, because they were closing that platform very strongly. Now only Intel Surfaces are left, and they have not closed down that Surface as much as the RT ones did, so there's less of a risk, but still, at least they had that backup plan to resort on if they wanted to.
And exactly, right now, it seems to be like a backup plan. But because they were not forced to do a full-on switch. But if you see that they are introducing one part after the other, like I mentioned, SteamOS got released 2 years ago. Now the Steam machines are finally out. They got released last fall. And then next step in the gaming industry right now is VR, which... the three biggest project right now for VR are coming out in the next few months. The Steam VR / HTC Vive product should be out in April. Like the Oculus should be out in a quarter or two. Same with the PlayStation VR, it should be out in 3 to 4 months. But like, they're building piece by piece to get more control while still saying to their original base that still wants to run Windows with their own PCs, like, yeah, you can do that. Don't worry about it. And then they'll start to build those features. They'll be able to say, like, yeah, Steam Machine will be better optimized for our VR headsets. And then what will be after VR? They'll say, like, oh, yeah, we'll build hardware. And, like... it feels logical, and I'm sure at some point Microsoft will try to do this move, and then they will try to not block those features, but try to maybe do an iOS move, or try to limit what a Windows PC, like the limit with the capabilities of Windows PC. But they will have time to build this pattern, this new setup, and it will be, in my opinion, a win-win situation. They will have arguments for their current customer to move this new platform, and also they will get more control.
Yeah, the thing that bothers me about PC gaming in particular is it's so much upkeep and a hassle to keep running. And I know that Steam machines are trying to take that trouble away from you and reduce the headaches that are involved. But like my computer, I don't want an OS update to necessarily break my workflow. I also don't want an OS update to necessarily break my games. I like to have clear isolation of this is my gaming stuff and this is my work stuff, and I can manage those two things separately. I also like being able to just turn on the console and play a game. And while that is less possible with PS4 than it was previously with like PS2 or a Saturn, it's still a lot less upkeep to just press X a couple times and do some software updates than it is to actually like have to bother with graphics card drivers, have to bother with updating Steam, have to bother with updating games. And having that Steam client permeate the entire experience, which is not necessarily great, and having to worry about multitasking and monitor resolutions and all that stuff. Like, you put a game in a console and it works. And I think that doesn't get enough credit, where PC gaming, you can have that kind of experience if you're lucky, but there's always a risk that it'll be more complicated. And with PlayStation or with Xbox, there's not even a risk of that's going to happen. It's just going to work, probably.
Right. And though, in my opinion, if I wouldn't say if Valve doesn't try to do that with Steam OS, they're doomed. But they will be able to bring more gamers onto their platform if they do so.
Like, I just fail to see what the big appeal of the PC gaming is. I mean, I enjoy first-person shooters with keyboard and mouse as much as anyone else, right? I think it's better experience in many cases, and I think that part of the reason I like Destiny is it's one of the first person shooters that I feel controls really, really well on a console controller. And people said the same thing about Halo. Like, it's no surprise that Bungie worked on both of those games, right? They really do a great job of handling the controls and making it feel like what you're seeing on screen reflects what you are doing. Whereas I think a lot of other games, the gun feel doesn't really feel... It feels like you're just waving a mouse around.
No, I think you're right. I think both of us have kind of the same opinion regarding console gaming compared to PC gaming. But all of this research regarding SteamOS and Steam Machine just made me realize something that I didn't forget about, but I decided to just say, like, it's not for me. And looking at kind of the blocks they are building, that's the first impression I had. It was like, huh. Seems that if they put the blocks one after the other and place them right, we could have Steam Machine that looks like PS4 and Xbox One in a couple of years. And especially with the hardware that we have in our current generation console, they are moving on the way, on the side of being more PC-like and not custom hardware for console. So it feels to me that like both of them, a couple of years ago, they were like walking on parallel lines, but now they kind of both of them slowly moving to a center that will say, like, yes, on the PC, you might have less control now. And now on console, you might have more power because parts that you use is known parts from PC manufacturer that are built at the scale of millions and millions per quarter and not a couple of, a million a quarter, because it's an IBM processor that nobody cares about. And that was the interesting point for me regarding Steam. Like, passing by all of the online store part and all of the shitty experience I had with it in the past, and seeing all of those blocks starting to be in play.
Yeah, but if all those blocks are in place and gaming consoles and PC gaming converge in the middle, what incentive is there for you to actually choose the Steam Machine over an actual console?
The incentive might be, I don't say it will be one, but it might be, if possible, the huge catalog of games that we'll have also on the PC and on console. Like, I could see that kind of those two worlds merging together. Well, I think right now, I think we're past a point that I didn't want to go through. But yeah, it's like all of this is pretty interesting. And if we go back just a bit, and I'll be able to end on Steam for a sec, unless you have something to add.
No, that's pretty much it.
Good. My last point would be, and we mentioned it a lot during this Steam conversation, would be VR. And I don't want to recapitulate because we spoke a lot in the past about VR, but my big quote for VR is 2016 will be the year of VR. And I'm so sorry, Luigi. It's not your year anymore.
Because that was 2 years ago.
I know, but I'm sure he's still pissed that it's not his year anymore.
Sorry, Luigi.
Yeah. So 2016 will be the year where, quote unquote, everyone that wants a VR setup, the same way that in the first year that 3D was teased in the entertainment industry, that like it will be the year where those early adopters will get those devices in their home.
I am genuinely considering getting a PlayStation VR when it comes out.
Ooh, wow. I'm surprised, to be honest.
I am too, but they announced the game that I wanted to play at a PlayStation Experience, so now I have a reason to buy it.
Hmm.
We might talk about it on the next episode about a PlayStation.
Yeah, and you know what? I think we'll end on that.
All right. So, if you want to find the show notes for this episode, you can go to limitlesspossibility.net/33, or you can find all of our episodes at limitlesspossibility.net. The podcast is also on Twitter, @limipo_podcast. That's LIMIPO_podcast. I am @Sakurina on Twitter. That's SAKURINA. And you can find Luc Olivier at
@Lucanouche. That's LUCCONOUCHE.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.